Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hey there, it's After Six. Todd Feinberg here. We're going to talk with Michael Leibowitz. We haven't heard a lot from Leibowitz over the past few weeks because of the lockdown, the COVID lockdown in prison that's reduced his telephone access, but we will do it now on WTIC News Talk 1080. Talking to Michael Leibowitz, the prisoner who started off all our prisoner interviews, who's a regular on the program and a bright and insightful character most of the time. And it's great to have you back. Mike, what else can I tell you?
Thanks, Todd. I'm very handsome as well. You might want to throw that in there.
I have never set eyes on you, not even a photograph, so I can't say anything about you. It's a very unusual thing to have a friend who you've never seen.
It is. It is. So today, Todd, I want to talk about something uncontroversial. I want to discuss race relations.
You're a good person for it. I think you have a unique perspective being in prison, and I assume what percentage breakdown would you say are there of different ethnicities and races in prison?
If I had to take a quick guess, I would say probably 50% black, 35% Hispanic, and 15% white. But that's just a guess.
Oh, really?
I really don't know.
So
yeah.
You guys are the minorities, the whites. And is race a way that people divide themselves up in prison?
Not really. Sometimes, yes, but for the most part, no. Everybody seems to get along fairly well.
Is there some kind of superficial attribute that is used to wall people off from each other?
No. One thing I will say that in prison, racism towards whites is far more on the surface. Like, you'll hear a lot of, you know, cracker this and cracker that. But the white guys that are racist generally keep it to themselves, lest they get their heads bashed in. Because, like I said, they are the minority. So they generally only do that when they're in circles amongst themselves.
But is that kind of talk meaningful in terms of impacting relationships, or is it just...
No, not at all.
Are you considering it to be meaningless?
It's meaningless. I've heard guys that you know that are thought of as the biggest racist in the world, and then you'll see them hanging around with guys from other races.
Okay. All right, what do you want to tell us about race relations? Because there is a fair amount of that going on in the world right now.
Well, as you know, I've been a big fan of these protesters, and, you know, I think that what happened to George Floyd was beyond disgusting, and I've been against, you know, the people who have the sort of knee-jerk reaction and want to, you know, discuss, well, the protesters are violent, or, you know, this and that. But watching TV today, something occurred to me, and just bear with me for a minute, and I promise it'll make sense. So in the prison I used to be in, a friend of mine named Doc, he's a black guy, and we used to debate racial issues quite a bit. And he helped me to see things from a perspective that I hadn't really seen before. And that perspective is that you can't just look at things in isolation. You have to consider the history of this country, all the way from slavery through Jim Crow and you know, lynching, the KKK. So, you know, there's a long history. So when something happens like what happened to George Floyd, while we, you're right, don't know whether that police officer was racist or not, it's understandable that somebody would think that it is, or think that it might be.
That they would link it to some larger narrative.
Sure. I mean, it makes sense. So, you know, at about the time I was having these conversations with that friend of mine, the Colin Kaepernick thing was going on. And so I came to understand why Colin Kaepernick would kneel and why so many in the black community would support him. But then I asked another friend of mine, and I told him, listen, I can understand that, but I said, can you understand why there's a lot of people that this country has been very good to and why they would take offense to him taking a knee? Because I think both perspectives are understandable. And I got him, and he came to see that. And as I've been listening to your show, there's been a lot of people that have been calling in and having what I would consider a knee-jerk reaction. But then you had a very good discussion the other day with a guy, and he said that he just wanted to be understood, like you were asking him to understand. So that all makes sense to me. Now, I was watching The View this morning, and they were talking about the white old man that got pushed down by the cop. Did you see that?
Sure.
In Buffalo, this white guy got pushed down, and none of the cops stopped to help him. So Whoopi Goldberg said, you know, we found that shocking that can happen to whites. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not surprising to me at all. And so I asked my celly, who's a black guy, and he said, yeah, that's surprising to me. And I'm thinking, well, it doesn't surprise me. It certainly wouldn't surprise any of the white kids I grew up with or any of the white guys I'm in prison with.
So it didn't surprise me at all.
No. And the thing is, so if you want people to see things from your point of view, it's reciprocal. You have to see things from their point of view. And I'm thinking this is not just a white problem of not seeing things from a black point of view. It evidently is that a lot of blacks don't see things from a white point of view. And if we're going to have this large discussion that everybody seems to want to have, I think that it's necessary to really branch out and have a big discussion. But that means honesty. It means acknowledging the historical significance of racism in this country. It means acknowledging that there's still a whole lot of racism in this country, most of it institutional. In regards to police brutality, I think that it does have a racial component. But it also has, like you pointed out over and over again, the union component, the fact that they're protected. It also has the code of silence component, where cops won't report on each other. There's also conservatives who defend the police no matter what. And there's also, excuse me for a second, I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, the war on drugs,
I think is a good component.
Because it brings people, you know, in poor neighborhoods into more contacts with police than they normally would have. And then, if we're really going to have a big discussion about this, that's going to go beyond the narrow part of the police brutality and the police. If we're going to discuss race relations and black problems, you know, within the black community, all the solutions that I'm hearing that the left is bringing up, which I think they might damage their cause with, is basically the same old of wealth redistribution, more money to education, more money to social problems. What nobody seems to want to say, well, I shouldn't say nobody, there are a few, is to discuss the problems in the black community that are the responsibility of the black community. And what I'm talking about is a large segment has a culture in the inner city which demonizes homosexuals, disparages women, and I hear it all the time in here, yelling out of the windows, you know, calling women this or that. The glorification of the criminal lifestyle, all that needs to be addressed. And you can't just ignore it and ascribe it to racism. Look, Jews and Asians that grow up in high crime areas have very low crime rates. Most people who are poor have low crime rates. Blacks that come from other countries, like the West Indies or Africa, have high employment rates, much higher than the blacks in this country. So to just chalk it up to racism is just a very narrow way to look at it. My rant is
racism on the part of whom?
Say that again?
Racism on the part of whom? Like, what would be the specific threat of racism that would result in those aspects of black culture that you think need to be addressed?
Okay, well, the fact that we've had this history of slavery and the history of blacks being abused and discriminated against, I think was bound to build resentments against white people. And those resentments...
Okay, Michael, let me just jump in for a second, because we're talking to Michael Leibowitz, our regular prisoner guest. I think it's important to say that there's a problem that does crop up, even though I agree with everything you said about going back into the history and to understand that there's a context to the way blacks interpret things that whites might gloss over and just view something situationally, and that leads to a divide that has people trying to discuss it butting heads. But on the other side of it, there is a desire to look at the past as a deflection, as a policy deflection, so that we can build relationship. I think the Democrats do this with black voters. They want to talk about statues that need to be torn down or something that happened 100 years ago, instead of as a way of showing that they care about minority voters, when in fact, in terms of policy, they don't. And the good example of that would be right now. All over television over the last few days, there have been all kinds of leftist leaders proposing all kinds of things and trying to identify all kinds of problems, but not actually addressing the prevalent one here in my mind, and that is, as you pointed out, the police unions, which control the policy and make it impossible to get rid of violent cops. So the fact that Democrats won't address the root of the problem requires them to run around in circles distracting people so that they don't, it doesn't become a glaring issue that they're refusing to say something that needs to be said.
Yeah, and this right here, what you just said, in my mind, it captures exactly how difficult this problem is. Because I think on one hand...
You have 1 minute left.
On one hand, I'm going to have to call you right back, and I'll have to use that hand. So I'll be right back in touch with you, Todd.
Okay, we're talking to Michael Leibowitz, prisoner in the state system.
The caller has
23 years almost. He's been in there. He's maybe up for parole in a couple of years. And he joins us every week, although over the past several weeks, he's been in lockdown. And as a result of that lockdown, that he's only been getting out of his cell for an hour a day. And that has given him time for maybe one or two phone calls. And that hasn't given him enough time to be able to come do a 20-minute interview with us, especially since, as you just heard, the phone calls get interrupted by the system after a 15-minute maximum. Leibowitz is back. Okay, go ahead. Continue your point.
So on the one hand, I think we have white people who are very hesitant to acknowledge the historical problem of racism in this country, the effect that slavery and Jim Crow have, and even the current racism today. A lot of people seem not to want to acknowledge that at all. But on the other hand, there's a lot of black people, and I think a lot of people on the left in politics, who want to use the past as an excuse for everything. And just, you know, everything a black person does wrong is attributable to race. Every time a white cop pulls them over, it's attributable to race. And every solution has to do with, we just need to throw money at the problem that we can steal from somebody else. And I think that that's the chasm between two sides that needs to sort of come together. I think that there's some truth in both sides, but I think, you know, to be honest, I think there's more truth from the black perspective, but that doesn't mean there's no truth coming from the white perspective. And if we're
But the danger here is, I was thinking about this morning, because did you see the Roger Goodell statement about basically having the NFL reverse its position on race and without mentioning Colin Kaepernick appear to endorse Colin Kaepernick?
All aboard the Pander Express.
Well, because we live in a commerce-based society, and more important to any of these people, I think, than race is their own political power if they're politicians, or monetary power if they're business people. So the business people are always going to flip and run where the power of the current is heading. And that creates a big problem where when the Democrats, with their control of the media, I think, are able to launch whatever narrative they want and not be held culpable for any of these problems that they are the primary perpetrators of in terms of policy. So right now, policy-wise, it seems to me there are easy changes and changes that desperately need to be made that are in the moment based, back to what we were talking about before, not historically based. We don't have to solve anything about slavery. We don't have to solve anything right now about Jim Crow. That was 50 years ago. What we need to solve right now, and this comes back to the notions of liberty, where I think you and I would find agreement, Michael.
Yeah.
And that is that if you give people who have been held down an end, a pivot point, where they can start to be treated normally, they can start to go to schools that are just as good as all the others, which they can't do right now because of the relationship between the Democrats and the unions. If they can't be treated the same in their communities, if they don't have economic opportunity, all these things are easily corrected. And within a generation, I think, because blacks are bright and creative and dynamic and energetic and dying for a chance, I think they would take off if you gave them the tools. But what it seems to me the power structure responses do is build a trap to hold minorities or poor people in permanent poverty rather than to set them free. And part of the system of keeping them imprisoned in poverty is these systems of support for poverty. When you spend money on poverty programs, that creates poverty. It doesn't create the opposite.
Yeah, and I agree with you that if we want to solve the issue of police brutality, then largely what we need to do is just break the union. All that other sugarcoating stuff they're talking about, reforms, are useless if they're still an all-powerful union. What I'm saying is that people are now saying we need to have a broader conversation. And if you want to solve the broader race issue in this country, it goes beyond police brutality. And that's where the acknowledging of the history comes in. But
yes,
I
agree with that. The trouble is, if you go down that path, you get lost down that path, I think, and it allows them to dodge what is more important than the past is the present in terms of improving lives. If you want to improve lives, you address right now. And Democrats will not address right now except with policies that are non-responsive to the specific problem. They do these comprehensive plans that have 35 different agenda items, none of which admits that the police unions are a big problem.
Okay, so what are the Republican solutions to this problem?
They're hiding because they don't want to be called racist.
Because they don't have any.
I disagree. Everything having to do with the U.S. Constitution and liberty and capitalism are the cures for these problems. You just need to get these racist structures out of the way.
There aren't any Republicans, Todd. Not there aren't any solutions. There aren't any Republicans or very few Republicans offering them. You're right. Their solutions are there. Liberty is the answer, but there's no Republicans.
Yes, but those. So if you ask Republicans about school policy, for example, they'll say there should be good education, there should not be teachers' unions controlling education, there should be a market-based system. That is one of the things. If there had been a market-based system over the past 50 years instead of a rigged system where special interest voting blocks get to make school policy, then blacks wouldn't have this education issue.
Okay, Todd, so then I want to hear Republicans coming out to end the war on drugs, which is a huge component of this, to abolish the teachers' unions, to abolish the minimum wage, not lower it, not hold it in place, abolish it, institute school vouchers as a path to total privatization of the school system, get rid of all private sector unions in which businesses are forced to bargain with them, highly deregulate the economy and move toward pure capitalism. And when Republicans start advocating that, then I'll say, yes, Republicans can have solutions. But one thing, Todd, you're absolutely correct about. Going back in history, right after the Civil War, blacks immediately began to thrive. Even in that situation of racism and have been held in bondage for centuries, they began to thrive. There were barber shops open. There were businesses open. There was even the establishment of what's known as Black Wall Street. And the whites could not compete with them to such an extent that they ultimately used, they used violence to overthrow them, and the law didn't protect those blacks. Whereas in a pure capitalist society, the law would have been there to protect them and they would have continued to thrive. They also thrive today when they're allowed to. I mean, all over the place, sports, entertainment, music, business. I mean, even with the racism, even with the obstacles, still many of them thrive. Imagine what they could do if those obstacles were removed, if they got rid of minimum wages, got rid of the teachers' union, things of that nature, and allowed them to be free. I think you'd see a very vibrant black community arise in very short time.
So I don't think Republicans are going to do that just because they consider themselves to be too far behind the eight ball on being able to talk about race. They get called racists if they say anything, and they're afraid of that. So they just prefer to leave the disaster Democrats have built in the hands of Democrats to fix because they see it as being impermeable. I'm not letting them off the hook for this, but they don't have their hands on the levers, and I hope by my own advocacy to help help push some to poke their nose in and take the chance of actually being part of a problem solver. So it's a failure, but I don't think it's one you can change.
It's a cowardice. I think they're cowards. I think that's why they don't come on your show. The few that do are good, and I respect them for it and compliment them for it. It's great. But most won't come on your show. On your show, you've been dealing with many of these issues, Todd. Prison reform, which would be a great way to going for, you know, to help the black community. You've talked about, with me, ending the war on drugs. You've talked about getting rid of the minimum wage. You've talked about capitalism, about breaking unions. All the things you talk about are wonderful, but the Republicans are silent on this, just as they've been silent about this COVID thing. So maybe you can wake them up. Maybe they can get a backbone. I don't know. I just know to put it all on the feet of Democrats is a mistake, because Republicans are accountable too.
Well, yeah, on a junior level, yes, they're not gonna go into dangerous political waters until there's some sign that there's a current moving in that direction. And I don't think there's anything we can do to change that. Democrats have to start caring about the minority communities they control first, and then Republicans will start jumping on board once they realize they won't take the blame for trying to. But, you know, a good comparison for it is on the state bankruptcy issue. The state has been driven into bankruptcy by this same dynamic of the union rigging scheme that the Democrats own and operate. And part of that is that that's allowed Democrats to rig elections so effectively that Republicans are afraid to attack that huge voting bloc and risk alienating it. So they have to try to work around the edges. And then the problem is they get into power occasionally, and they don't have any sway to be able to deal with it, or the courage, because they're afraid they're going to just get stopped and waste their time. So nothing changes. And that's
well,
why I
lead,
think it's...
Todd.
What's
leaders
that?
Lead. They don't, leaders lead. They don't wait for the other party.
No, I don't think so. I've never seen a leader lead. Have you seen a leader lead?
I think Ron Paul was a leader. He came out and said what he thought. He pushed for the things that he wanted. I think Bernie Sanders, as much as I can't stand his policies, I think he's a leader who's got some guts. I think Martin Luther King Jr. had guts.
If you have a base that supports what you believe, or let me put it in the opposite order, I think people believe things that their bases allow them to believe. So if you're representing a Kentucky district, it's easy to be a conservative, or a Texas district like Cruz. Senator Cruz is one of those guys who plays the notes that he's allowed to play because he represents a conservative district.
He's a coward,
and liberals
too.
Become... What's that?
I said Ted Cruz is a coward, too. He proved it when he endorsed Trump. But let me just say this, Todd, because I think I'm running out of time and I want to get it out. If nobody will lead on this issue, maybe I will. I'll lead on these issues. I'll speak out. I'll put myself at risk, and I'll lead. And I think you will, too.
Awesome.
And that's a
awesome.
Start.
Michael Leibowitz, good to have you back in action. Thank you, sir.
It's been great, Todd. Thank you, and keep it up.
That's it for today's After 6 Hour. Thanks to Michael Leibowitz and the prison system, which lets him dial the phone and talk with us. Don't forget, we've got the rant line. Give us your feedback on this and other segments on the program. 860-751-4698. I'm Todd Feinberg. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.